Thanks for spending time with Fusion Community Church through our podcast. These can be accessed anytime through iTunes or on our website, fusioncommunitychurch.org. We hope you enjoy today's message.
You know, what's really funny is I remember that happens whenever I go somewhere. You know, what's really funny is I remember that phone call, and I remember my kids fighting on the playground at that exact moment. They did make it, by the way. They didn't kill each other. And I can also remember something that I think it was Andrew, asked me on the phone that day. He said, "Are you going to be okay with no Chick-fil-A?" And at that moment, it was really close to me saying, "Forget this. This is not worth it." But I am here, and I'm excited to be here with you guys today. You know, I have been hearing so much about Fusion Community Church ever since about that phone call, and it's great to finally be able to be here with you guys and see you. I just want you guys to know, this is not normal, and that's a good thing. God is doing something so special and so incredible in Cobleskill, New York, and it's just contagious. I can feel the energy in the room. Fantastic. So I'm excited to be here, to be able to learn from you guys, to be able to partner with you guys, and this is a great, great day for us. Let me ask you guys a question to get started today. Are you awake? Okay, like 20 of you are. The rest of you, would you be awake if you had more coffee? Okay, there we go. How many of you, you know, 9:30 in the morning is pretty early. How many of you wish you were still asleep? Like 4 or 5 of you. Okay, let me give you a couple of interesting facts about sleep really fast that I found really astonishing. The first one is this. Do you realize that the average person spends more than 20 years of their adult life sleeping? Now, if you did the math and you thought about it, you would be like, okay, that makes sense. But when you actually hear the number, that sounds crazy, right? 20 plus years of your adult life sleeping? I found that fascinating. Fact number two about sleep. Do you know that human beings are the only animals that willingly fight sleep? You know, to like watch football games. Now, what I want to know is what researcher figured out that animal, and how did they figure out that animals don't fight their sleep? How do you determine that? I don't get it. That doesn't make any sense to me. The third fact that I want to tell you about sleep is this. This generation of people sleep less on average than any generation previous to it. And I think the reason for that is because our lives are incredibly busy, right? We have so much going on. We live at such a fast pace. We have such just a mass of things that we have to do. You get up every week. You go to work on Monday, right? You work 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week sometimes. You take your kids to soccer practice. You take your kids to piano lessons, whatever it is that your kids do, you take your car to the mechanic, you go to the grocery store, you go to the dry cleaners, you go get a haircut. You do, not me, but everybody else does. You do all these things in life, and then you go hang out at church on the weekend, and then you get up the next Monday morning, you do it all over again. We don't have a whole lot of time for sleep. Our lives demand that we stay awake and alert. And a matter of fact, there is a new disease. It's called hurry sickness. Some of you laugh, but it's actually a real thing. You can go look it up in medical journals. It's called hurry sickness. It's where people get in so big of a hurry that they cannot wait for anything and they have no patience for anything. And it's actually a medical condition or an excuse. I'm not really sure yet. But medical condition is what we're going to go with. And it's a big, big deal. There's a researcher named Professor Richard Wiseman. He's in England, and he decided that he was going to do a study on this hurry sickness thing, and he wanted to find out what the fastest-paced cities in the entire world were. And so he went out with the English government, and they decided they were going to run this study about hurry sickness and see which cities had the fastest-paced cities. And what they did was they did a bunch of interviews, and they talked to a bunch of people, and what they finally decided on, their main criteria was they were going to place 60 feet, an object here and an object there. They put 60 feet between them, and they just studied how fast people walked from that point to this point. And the average was going to be whatever that place that city came in. And the fastest paced city in the world is Singapore. And people walk 60 feet. On average, the people there on the streets would walk 60 feet in 10.55 seconds. Now, if you're wondering what that is, go home today. This is your homework assignment. Go home today, measure 60 feet in your backyard, and see how fast it takes you to walk from point A to point B. 10.55 seconds is pretty fast. Second was Copenhagen. Third was Madrid, Spain. You have to go all the way down to number 8 to get to the first U.S. city, and that was New York, obviously, at about 12.2 seconds or something like that to walk 60 feet. And coming in at 9 and 10 were Cobleskill and Niskayuna, respectively. Fastest-paced cities in the world, yep, in case you were wondering where you were at. But here's the deal. Our lives are so fast-paced, and you can actually take a quiz on his website that tells you how fast-paced your life is and if you're suffering from hurry sickness. And I took the quiz, and I made right in the middle, so I don't really know what that means, but right in the middle, so they couldn't tell me anything. But I wanted to give you a few ideas, a few check marks here, so you can know if you're suffering from hurry sickness. Is that all right? Okay. Number one, you can know you're suffering from hurry sickness if you frequently, when you are having conversations with people, whether you do it or not, you feel the urge to hurry them along to get to the point. Some of you are laughing because you do it. And don't, okay, wives, don't point at your husbands. This is not the time. I see that happening across the room. Let's not do that. But you rush people in conversation. Number two way you can know that you suffer from hurry sickness, if when you get behind someone on the road and they're driving a little slower than you would like, or you're walking in a store and the aisle is narrow and they're walking a little slower than you would like, how do you respond? See, we're getting a little more personal now. I see people all around the room like, I'm not so sure about this. The third way, the last two are very personal to me, and I'm almost embarrassed to admit some of these things to you, but I'm going to. Third way you can know you suffer from hurry sickness, when you go to the grocery store and you buy a few items and you go up to the front, and let's say they've got three registers or four registers open, but there's a few people in each line, okay? And you pick the line that you think is going to be the fastest. What I do is I determine where I would have been in each line, and I watch, and I get very, very frustrated if the line I picked was the wrong line. A few people. Now, this is the really embarrassing one, number four. Here we go. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, we go through drive-thru at a fast food place, and if there are four or five cars in front of us, I will politely ask my wife if she would like to go inside so we can see which one of us orders first. If you do that, and I may be the only person in the world, but if you do that, you might suffer from hurry sickness. In the words of the famous theologian Ferris Bueller, life moves fast, and if you don't stop and observe it, you're going to miss it. So here's what I'm thinking, and this is what has been dragging on my soul for the last several months, is that there are so many people who are in such a hurry. And they're convinced that because they've got so much to do, they've got so much going on, they're convinced they're living their lives, and they're wide awake, and that they've got everything they could possibly need. Their life seems perfect and full and complete, but what's really happening is they are sleepwalking their way through life. They're not really living, they're just existing. They don't really know what they're missing because they've never had it, but they're missing something. John 10:10 puts it this way. If you have your Bibles, you want to turn there, or it's going to be up on the screen. John 10:10 says this: the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. What I believe is this, that one of the greatest lies we've been told is that if we were existing and if we're awake and we're living our life, that everything is fine. But I believe that our enemy is robbing so many people of what a relationship with Jesus could mean in their lives. And they're going day to day, every day in their life, and they think they've got everything they could possibly need. They've got everything together because they're living their life, when in reality, They're just sleepwalking their way through their life. They're just existing. And they don't understand what having life to the full means, because they don't know what it means to have a relationship with Jesus and what that could mean in their lives. They don't know what it means to have a relationship with Jesus and what that could mean in their marriages and how that could transform everything. They don't know what it means to have a relationship with Jesus and what that could mean for their family, for their relationship with their kids. They don't have a relationship with Jesus, and they don't know what that could mean for their finances, for their jobs, for the addictions that they struggle with, for the storms of life that they go through. They don't know because they're sleepwalking their way through life, and they have never been awakened to what it means to have a life spent with Jesus and what it means to have a relationship with Him. And that burns at my soul. That's what keeps me awake at night, is seeing thousands of people, literally thousands of people at our doorsteps, who are sleepwalking their way through life and are completely clueless to what it means to have a relationship with Jesus. And they're oblivious to what that could mean in their life. I want to tell you another quick story. I am actually from Chickamauga, Georgia, not Chunkamahaga or whatever he said. You know, it's funny that people always make fun of me for being in Chickamauga, but if you drive through New York, let's be honest. Okay, we all get it. Well, I grew up in Chickamauga, and as you can imagine, the summers there got really boring. Not a whole lot to do in Chickamauga, Georgia. You could walk to the hardware store, which is pretty much all we had, and then you could come home, and that was pretty much it. And I can remember being a teenager, 13, 14 years old, and being incredibly bored every summer, and I would always have friends come over, but you can only play so many video games, and it was hot outside. You tried to figure out what to do. And so we would get really, really creative, and we would make up games to play with each other. And if you're a teenager in the room, I just want you for the next 3 or 4 minutes to do this, okay, because I am not condoning any of the actions that you are about to hear. We made this game up. It's similar to King of the Mountain, and basically what it happened was this, is that there were three of us, me and my friend Jonathan and my friend Raven, and we decided that two of us would be on the inside of the house, one of us would be on the outside of the house, and the job of the two people on the inside were to keep that one person on the outside outside at all costs, and I do mean at all costs. To show you how serious we were, one time I was the one on the inside with me and Raven, I think, and what we decided to do was boil a pot of water, balance it up on top of the doorway so that when Jonathan walked in, it would fall on him. Teenagers, please keep your ears plugged. That's how serious we took this game. We were not playing, okay? And so this one, there were five ways you could get into the house. There was a front door, there were two side doors, there was a window, and you could go up through the basement. And so the person on the outside, their job was to get into the middle of the house, and we had a chair set up. And if you made it to that chair, you were safe, and somebody else had to go outside. Well, this one particular day, I was on the outside, and nothing was working. Summers in Georgia are really hot. It was horrible outside. Another rule was you couldn't get any water until you made it inside. We were really vicious like that. And so I was on the outside, trying to figure out how to make it inside. And I decided, you know what? Nobody ever goes in the front door, because the front door is wide open into the living room, the dining room, the kitchen. Everything's kind of right there. So I'm just going to, I got surprise. I got the element of surprise here. I'm just going to walk in the front door, and hopefully nobody will be there. And I walked up to the front door, and I opened the door. And guess what? Nobody was there. There was not a soul in sight, so I kind of creeped in, opened the door, and looked around. I looked this way, and I looked back over, and I see my friend Jonathan standing, coming out of a bedroom with a hockey stick in his hand. You laugh now, but the thing is, we didn't even play hockey. No clue where that came from. And so he takes this hockey stick, and he throws it like a javelin at me. I see this thing coming at my face. I turn around and I run out the door, but I left the wooden part of the door open, and I turn around just in time to see this hockey stick smashing into the front door, leaving a hole about half an inch deep where the butt of this hockey stick hit. And I thought to myself, we're in trouble. You know, we've broken things before. We've made messes before, and we would always blame it on the cat or, you know, T-Board, the kid that couldn't speak English down the street. But this time, we were horrible people. This time, we weren't getting away with this. We weren't getting away with this at all. And so we had to come up with something really fast. So we got together, and we thought, we walked back down to the hardware store, I promise you, and we went to the decor section. We found a heart that had flowers all over it that said, "This home is filled with love." And we hung that heart over the hole. And I promise you, for 10 years, they never noticed. And I think I was already married and out of the house before I said, "By the way, under that door, you might want to check that." So for 10 years, my mom was completely oblivious to this giant hole in the front door. Now, was the hole gone? No, it was still there. But I think what happens is this, is that there are so many people that are just living their life and they cover everything up, but the hole's still there, the hole's still real. And if they don't have a relationship with Jesus, it doesn't matter that they get busy in their life. They're still sleepwalking their way through life and they don't understand what it means to have a relationship with Jesus, and they're completely oblivious to everything that Jesus and his grace could mean in their lives. And that drives me crazy. Romans 13, verse 11 says it like this, verses 11 and 12. "And do this, understanding the present time. The hour has already come for you to wake up from your slumber, because our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. So let us put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light." What we believe in Niskayuna, in the whole capital region, is that darkness has had its day and that we are ready to see the light of Jesus come in a bright way. We are no longer content to sit back and to see the thousands, the hundreds of thousands of people around us sleepwalk their way through life, not realizing what a relationship with Jesus could do in their lives. It was just a little over a year ago that I drove from the airport in Albany onto that campus for the first time. And I saw where the church was, and I saw what was happening. And over the course of that weekend, my heart really broke for this community. It was that Sunday morning. Someone brought in the Sunday morning newspaper. In one of the sections, it read, "Albany, Schenectady, Troy, the most unchurched post-Christian metropolis in the United States." And at that moment, I knew that something was happening. We still had some praying to do and some thinking to do, but I knew at that moment that God was calling us to do something big. And we were living in Clearwater, and I hate telling people this story, because when I tell people I moved from Clearwater to Albany, they're like, "What?" But we believe that God was calling us to do something big. We believe that God was calling for an awakening. Ephesians 5:14 says it like this, "Wake up, O sleeper, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you." We believe that the darkness has had its day, and it's time for Christ's light to shine in the capital region. We believe that God has placed us at a place where we can see hearts wakened to life, from the people that are just kind of squeaking through to the people that are just getting by, to the people that are living their life without Christ. They're sleepwalking their way through their life. We believe that God has called us to be a light, a place where hearts can be wakened to new life in Jesus. It was almost 300 years ago, right here in the Northeast, that the first great awakening happened. If you know your history or you remember your history, you remember that it was a very spiritually dead time. That people were living their lives completely oblivious to Jesus, the same way we just talked about. And something happened. God came on the scene in a big way, and he began to show up in the lives of people, and people began turning to Jesus by the thousands. And we have this big prayer. We have this huge prayer that God is on the verge of doing something big again. We believe that God is calling for people to have their hearts wakened to Christ the same way We serve the same God that was here almost 300 years ago, and we believe that he can do the same thing now. I want you guys to join me in praying this prayer, that God is going to cause the people of our area, he's going to come in such a way that we see an awakening like we've never seen before. That the people who are sleepwalking their way through life and just kind of going through it would find new life in Jesus. And that it would change our whole city. As a church, we are no longer content just to be the church we've always been. We're doing something different now. We're going to take the next 7 weeks away from our campus, our church building, and we're going to Central Park where the people are. And we're going to engage them. We're going to have conversations with them. We're going to give them free food, which means they'll stay and have conversations with us. And we're just going to have church in the park for the next couple of months. And we're going to relaunch in October. We're so excited about the vision that God has given us to see hearts awakened to him, to awaken to new life. And we believe we are right on the edge of God doing something incredible in our region. So will you guys join me in praying that God would waken hearts to life? God, thank you so much for your word. Help us, God, to realize that spiritual warfare is real, God, that the things that are happening in our community are real, and that there are so many people that are being deceived and convinced of a lie and being robbed of what a relationship with you and what your grace looks like and what your grace can do in their lives. And God, I pray that over the coming months, God, that you would help us to shine the light in the darkness. And God, that you would help our community, the people who are far from you, find new life in you. Be wakened to your grace, to the hope that comes with having a relationship with you. And God, we have a big, bold prayer to see thousands come to know you and have their hearts wakened to Christ. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.